And he said, yes, I'm phoning you because I understand you have the global rights intellectual copyright on the word naked.
No way.
To which Sue said, trust me, if we had the global intellectual property rights on the word naked, we would not be doing leadership. We'd be making real money. Which I thought was a brilliant response.
Welcome to the Business Mastermind podcast with business strategist, speaker and author, Gavin Preston. Tap into this meeting of minds between everyday business people on their journey to master business growth. Join them as they share strategies, insights and shortcuts to help you survive and thrive in business and life as you scale your business and achieve a bigger impact.
Welcome to another episode of the Business Mastermind. Today, I've got great privilege of spending time with David Taylor. David is an author, a five-time best-selling author, working on his sixth book. He's best known for his brand and his books of the title Naked Leader. David, welcome.
Thank you very much, Kevin. It's great to be here.
So I've had the privilege of being a student of David's and working alongside him and working on behalf of David and his message within the Naked Leader brand and working on big corporate change programs with Ford Great Britain, amongst others. One of the things that I've always loved about David is the models that he works with and the way his mind and brain works in terms of simplifying the complex. But I want to start with your fundamental model for all your work, which is the formula for guaranteed success. Do you want to share that, what that's all about?
Yes, Gavin. A few years ago, I asked myself the question, is it possible that we as individuals in teams and in organizations do something differently when we achieve success from when we don't? And after a lot of work, a lot of huge A3 sheets around the dining room, every formula that was out there, we summarized it as follows. Know where you want to go, know where you are now, know what you have to do to get to where you want to go, and then do it. And we've managed to fit that onto a business card. So it's very, very simple. It's very scientific because it's what each and every one of us does every day. And as I say, it's very, very simple. But simple is never very easy. Simple is always very difficult. And that's the formula that we follow in everything that we do, Gavin, absolutely everything.
So when it comes to working in businesses, you work a lot in sort of larger corporates. How do you implement the formula for guaranteed success? How is it applied?
Well, the first thing is we give a bigger build-up to it than I've just given it there.
Sure.
And we make it very personal to people so that they apply their own lives to it. However, we implement it literally in stages. So know where you want to go. We focus on outcomes, focusing on what you want, not what you don't want. What's the financial value, etc.? And that's separating the what from the how, which, as you know, Gavin, you're far from a student of mine, you're more than equal. It's very much around separating the brain, stopping the brain make immediate decisions, stopping the brain make asking the question how. So we basically ask the question what, and of course, if you can separate the question, the what from the how, it's a big step forward, but the brain will fight against you because it wants everything to be completed. Then we look at where they are now, and we focus very much on what people can do, not what they can't, what strengths they have, not what they don't have. Okay. So, for example, we're doing lots of work in EDF at the moment. A better example in terms of the past is Veolia, but in EDF, they're just starting to embrace this concept. And in Veolia, they asked us to look at values in the organization. They'd introduced 8 values, and they couldn't understand why people weren't behaving according to them.
Right.
And what they were doing was they were bringing people in who were telling people off. They were telling people for not living the values, you need to get better at that value, better at that value. And we went in and said, which values are you already behaving, enjoying, applying your strengths to, behaving in what you would call to be a fantastic way? And of course, not only did that get them to behave more in that way, it actually got them to say, well, hang on a minute, I'm also not doing that very well. So people need a standard to live up to, not down to.
Love that.
Also, the chances of us against us being born in terms of knowing where we are now. Richard Dawkins of Oxford University has concluded that it's 1 in 10 trillion to the power of 4, the chances against us being born. So we're pretty unique.
Wow.
Not just you and I, I'm afraid, Gavin. Everyone listens.
Everybody, yes, absolutely.
The key for me, but not the key for everyone now applying this formula, they all have their own favourite areas, is know what you have to do to get to where you want to go. And that comes down to avoiding as long as possible one C word and introducing another. The C word to avoid is change. Change is boring because it usually involves lots of PowerPoints, and wouldn't you rather have deep root canal surgery without anaesthetic and go to... Then read another manual on total quality management. It's irrelevant because we're changing all the time. Our skin renews completely every 28 days without going on any meetings or seminars or reading any books. It's also insulting because change inevitably means someone else telling you to change. And somebody pointed this out to me this morning, and this is new. Change also, when people talk about change, they all mean different things. So if somebody says, we need to change this team, someone else can say, I agree. But of course, they don't actually know. There's a presupposition there that they're both on the same page as regards to what needs to change and how it's going to change.
For sure.
So forget change. Don't forget change. If you really are serious about change, then introduce choice. The more choices you can give to people. Let me quote a professor because I ought to be a bit academic. It is the change. It is the choices we have in our lives that decide our destiny.
Love that.
Dumbledore, Harry Potter. And then it comes to doing it. And that comes down to taking an action, stop talking about it, just do something. I think everyone listening to this would agree, the only way to know whether something will work is to actually do something and see.
Sure.
That's the only way.
That's how we learn.
Yeah. Alan Turing came out with a great line when he was interviewed in terms of going to work on the Enigma. And he was told, the Enigma machine is impossible. Eight nations have decided it's impossible. And he said, well, let me have a go at it, and then we'll find out. That's the sort of, you know, and this is about doing something and then falling over. You and I have both fallen over in our lives and in our entrepreneurial careers, and it's about getting back up again and again and again and again and doing something different. So in very simple terms, that is not new to anyone listening to this, because that's what we do all the time when we achieve success. The challenges. Know where we want to go. Are we brave enough to think, imagine if I simply could not fail? Where we are now, are we brave enough to realize we're all amazing, unique individuals with unlimited passion, potential, and energy? Know what you have to do to get to where you want to go? That means priorities. Are we brave enough to decide to do something, and in organizations particularly, say, well, if you're going to do that project, what project are you stopping? I often say, Gavin, as you know, the most innovative thing an organization can ever do is to stop doing work. And then do it. How many times will people get back up again in the face of all the negative media that's around, in the face of their friends and family who'll say give up? There's nothing wrong with giving up, of course, but I believe people give up too early.
They do.
And of course...
Why might that be, though? Why do they give up too early, in your experience?
Because I think people are waiting for the perfect solution, first of all, so they don't do anything in the first place. And then they do it. And when they've done one thing, they think, oh, well, I'm not very good at that, I'll switch. I think the other thing people do is they lower their outcomes. Oh, I can't achieve that outcome, so I'll lower my outcome to something that I can achieve. And also, people don't want to be embarrassed. People don't want to... And people... Failing. Most people think of failing... It's almost a nurtured reaction to failing, is that you must avoid it. Yeah, everyone from J.K. Rowling to Mike Oldfield to Richard Branson to every single person who achieves success loves failure, adores failure. And my first forage outside of corporate life was a weekly column in Computer Weekly. It's a must read. And I wrote a weekly column on leadership. They turned me down 47 times. And I kept every email, every text I printed out, I kept everything on walls. Every single rejection.
Did you?
Because if you are prepared to adore, love, and celebrate when you're rejected, and you're prepared to go back and do something different, you're bound to succeed. You're absolutely bound to. You're actually guaranteed to.
Love that.
I love that. So we're working our way around the model, formula for guaranteed success. So you're saying your favorite element of the model, where you know the rubber hits the road, so to speak, is knowing what you have to do to get there.
And the challenge there, Gavin, is there's so many choices out there. So what we do is we basically have three things in Naked Data. We have an ethos, which is there's nothing wrong with you.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of things that you may not do very well, but there's nothing that's wrong with you. You can't fix it. What's right with you? On the day we're born, and this is the one thing that our industry agrees on, everything else we all disagree on, is that everybody's born with only two natural fears, the fear of falling over, which you need in order to learn to walk, and fear of loud noises, which we get over by the time we're teenagers. So there's nothing actually wrong with us. And so our first thing is that's our ethos. The second thing is the formula. And the third thing is we do a deal. And this is a very powerful thing that we do with teams and organizations and individuals. And the deal is this. Basically, for anything you want to achieve in your life or in your team or your project or your organization, we'll tell you what to do. We'll cut through thousands of years of soft and fluffy coaching, meaningless mentoring, and boring facilitation away in country houses where you spend a week coming up with a mission statement that everyone just thinks is the most boring thing you've ever seen in your life. And you lose the will to live. And we say to people, we'll tell you what to do. We'll cut through all those years. We'll tell you what to do. We'll tell you exactly what to do. And you'll do what we tell you to. Or you'll do something else. We don't mind. You just will do something. So yeah, that's my favorite part is what you have to do to get to where you want to go. And of course, the irony is that we take ages to make decisions in organizations and in meetings. And then we keep revisiting them again and again and again. So absolutely essential is to make a true decision that you're going to stick with. A true decision that you stick with, and then get those whatever they're called, neurons inside our brains going, do something. Do you know, there's a reason that so many European countries can speak so many more languages than we can in this country. If you are in school in Germany and you want to learn French and you learn that yes in French is oui, they say you can now speak French. I'm not making this up.
Really?
The teacher said,
you learn one word.
You can now speak French.
Fantastic. I can speak Welsh.
Yeah. We can suddenly all speak lots of languages. Now, of course, people listen to this and say, that's ridiculous. You have to learn a certain percentage of a language to be able to say that you speak it. But anyone listening to that who thinks that, you might come up with what? 20%? 25%? Yeah. Well, it's a documented fact that most people in this country speak English to the extent of 4% of the words available. We use 4% of the available words. So anyone listening to this think it has to be above 10, 15%. We don't speak English either. However, there's another reason. The moment somebody believes they can do something and they're congratulated for it, they are more likely to do it again.
Absolutely.
Far more likely to do it again.
Absolutely. You know, it's really interesting because I live in North Wales. My wife is Welsh, as are my two boys. So I've learned a few words in Welsh. And I was out for a few drinks with a friend a few months back, and we got chatting to some other guys at the bar. And, you know, you say cheers in Welsh, yakida. When someone hands you a drink and you say,
is it really yakida?
Yeah, no, no, really, it is yakida.
I thought they made that up for the films.
Yeah, yakida. And you say, diolch, as thank you. So I just used a few of my, you know, pidgin Welsh words. And the Welsh guy my new friend who just bought me the pint next to me, he said, if you're going to speak Welsh, at least learn to speak it properly.
Yes.
And my friend, who actually is a Welsh speaker, just thought that was hilarious and never stopped having a laugh with me about it since. But my point is, in that moment, that guy quashed my desire to try.
Well, it's really, I'll give you a similar example, but opposite side of the coin. I was in Paris recently, and I wanted to find out the route to somewhere. And I went up to this guy and I sort of learned the phrase in French, which of course I have. And I went up and I asked him this question in as good a French as I could manage. And he looked at me and I thought he was going to say, reply in English, which of course is the insulting thing people do.
Absolutely.
And he replied to me in French. Now, I still don't know whether he replied to me in French as if to say, well, up you for not being able to speak our language. But he didn't. I thought it was a courtesy. He did it very warmly and whatever. And then, of course, he helpfully pointed with his arm. And I thought, no event has any meaning. I'm the meaning we choose to give it. So I decided to take the meaning. He showed me great deference by replying to me in his own native language. But just to double check, he pointed at the end. The difference in children when we focus on what they can do, not what they can't, is just extraordinary. And one day our education systems around the world will wake up to that. The difference for you and I as well is exactly the same. And as I say, in organizations, I was on the phone this morning talking about an event, and they were saying, we need people to change their behaviors. Well, give them choices. Give them choices.
So how does that land in an organization? So instead of the C word of change, we're giving him the new one, choice. How does that land with individuals in organisations?
We're very fortunate that Brexit happened. Now, I didn't vote for Brexit. I'll be open. I voted for Remain, and we have many pan-European clients. So it didn't do us any favours until Brexit really was the pain. I'll cover this now. As human beings, we only do something to the best. We'll only ever choose to do something to the best of our ability because we choose to. Because our choices are so important. And the choices we make will come down to our self-esteem at that given moment in time, which will determine the number of choices that are available to us. And we'll always choose the one that moves us fastest towards pleasure or fastest away from pain.
Right.
We don't do that as a pitch in organizations. But if you take all that together, here's the irony in organizations. CEOs have only one agenda at the moment. Survival.
Yeah.
Store cash. It's an unknown world out there. We've got to be ready for the future. Fear, fear, fear. Interestingly, the only way they can do that is to get their people to choose to change their behavior. The phrase we use is, when you can get your people to actively choose to do what you really need them to do, you can achieve literally anything, anything. And we recently won a pitch for that, by the way. We didn't understand what we were being asked to pitch for, because I won't say it was a Japanese technology company, there's quite a lot of those, and they basically shared with us five of their top projects. It was full of jargon and everything, and they said, can we have a pitch for each of the five? And the good news was we were about to win these people as a client, but the bad news was I didn't understand a word they were talking about. They basically gave it to Bridget, remember Bridget?
Yeah, yeah.
She came back and said, why don't you just give me your line? Fast-track behavioural choice. And just say, apply that to any of your five, you'll get it. And we won two of them as a sort of trial. And we're working in there now. So it really comes down to the behavioral choice. However, that's not going to get you in the door. So we came up as a result of Brexit after a lot of time and energy. I won't say who, but a top business leader who I'd never met in my life rang us the moment the Brexit result was, embedded in, I think it was about 9 o'clock in the morning. I was in the middle of moaning to everyone about Brexit, all the naked data people. And I was having, and good moans are great, by the way. Now and again, have a good moan. How would you do something about it? And Sue came to the door and said, we've got this person on the phone. And I thought she was winding me up. So I took the phone and this lady, the CEO, said, David, I've never worked with you. I've never met you, but I've read all your books. I'm facing a bit of a crisis. I don't know what to say to people in my board meeting or whatever, because I didn't expect this to happen. And she said, you know, what am I going to do with Brexit? And I had a real moment of choice, Gavin. I could have said, which I wanted to say, tell me about it and have a really good moment, you know?
Yeah.
However, I didn't. I said, well, it's really interesting you say that, because in Naked Leader, we actually thought this was a possibility. And she said, really? And I thought, that's not a lie, because it's always 50-50.
Yeah.
James Bond, live and let die. You had a 50-50 chance, Mr. Bond. You weren't even close. Always stick with that. Always stop with that thought. So I said, we were thinking of it. And there are 7 key actions that you need to take. She said, quick, I've got a pen. Tell me what they are. And I said, I think we need to meet for a coffee and go through them in person. She said, okay. So we arranged to meet on the Monday morning. Put the phone down and everyone said, wow, that was amazing. What are these 7 actions? I said, we've got to make them up now. And we did. And these became our absolute cornerstone for Brexit. We had EY. EY phoned up and they said, we just had the CEO on the phone. You know, we're talking to the CEO to do a canvassing about what does Brexit mean for you. And she said, I don't know. You need to speak to David Taylor. Can you come in and talk to the partners at EY? EY said, you're not allowed to say you came in to talk to us. But there's 120 people in the room, for goodness sake. So anyway, I went in to talk to them and I stood up at the front and I said what our offer is. I didn't say it as an offer. I just said the new first rule of accounting is to get 3 times more value, confidence, and agility from the people that you already have.
Love that.
And it took us,
anybody disagree with that?
The whole weekend to come up with that.
Yeah.
And we call this an irresistible offer.
But
Gavin, if anyone's listening to this thinking, wow, or thinking, you know, what a big head or whatever, that took us, it actually took us years to come up. We have had every line you can imagine. And now we've found the golden nugget. Because the biggest response we get to that, Gavin, is people don't believe it. People just don't believe it's possible. So three times more value, confidence and agility from the people that you already have.
Brilliant.
And you can, and we also add with 3 times less time and stress and all that stuff.
Okay.
But that's the essence of it.
Yeah.
So we wrote to, let's just say 12 friends and said, for a reduced fee, and obviously you pay us more if we achieve it, can we trial this with you? And we did that with about 5 different companies. It worked spectacularly well. So we now have on my BlackBerry, which I'm proud owner of, now an Android. Basically, we have on each of 1 to 9 keys. I don't have my wife's fast track number. I don't know what her number is because I just dial Rosalind, you know, just press Rosalind. But 1 to 9, my fast track numbers are all CEOs who will say that 3 times more works. And it's so powerful to sit with somebody and they say, well, sorry, that's impossible. Just press any number. I've actually forgotten which number is who. Just press any number. Well, I've just got the voicemail for John Lehman. I've got the voicemail for John Lehman. Well, leave a message for John Lehman then. And John Lehman always gets back. So that's kind of it in a nutshell. But you know, somehow after many years of getting things wrong, we in Naked Leader have managed to find this balance between money, and it is about money. Money's where an organization gets real. There's no getting away from that. And behavior. The other feedback we get from not-for-profit organizations and government organizations, public sector, and charities particularly is, you can't talk about money here. They don't talk about money. Well, there's a reason that councils are running out of money. There's a reason public sector, you know, they're running. And there's a reason charities are in trouble, because they don't talk about money.
Good point.
Money is simply money. You may as well have Mars bars as a unit for currency, or lamps. It's just a unit of currency. However, we kind of get in the door through that, and stay in the door by using, I wouldn't say we're corporate, I think we're quite maverick. But we managed to get in the door on the basis of the financial value. And then once we're in the door, we focus about behavioural choice.
Brilliant. And of course, for individuals that are working in those organisations, the fact that you're giving them a choice rather than enforcing change upon them, They're open. They're receptive.
We have a phrase. I can't remember if we had it when we last worked together, Gavin, but basically most organizations wrap the, basically they wrap the people around the organization. This is your job title. This is your, this is your job description. This is your competency framework. This is your parking place. I mean, how boring. These are hours of work. What we say is the future is all about wrapping the organization around the people. So, we do a lot of stuff with Skanska, and recently somebody was being interviewed and they said, I'll work with you from Monday to Wednesday, but I'm doing charity work Thursday and Friday. Our daughter has openly said, Olivia said that in the future, I might like to have two jobs and some charity work and some corporate work. You've got to wrap it around your people. If you've got great people, which you have,
yes.
I'll put it this way, in a summary of everything that we've said so far. If all you do as an organization, whatever your size, be it one person or a million people, if all you did was unlock the strengths and the talents, the potential and the genius of the people you've already got, you're made.
And what would be a practical first step for a leader, manager in an organization, a business owner to start to unlock that strength, that challenge, that genius?
I think the first practical way to do it is to sit down with each of their direct employees one-to-one and say, how would you like to be best led by me so that you give your best every day?
Love that. Yeah. And surprisingly, you'll get an answer and it'll be quite different, but you're actually working in line with an individual's wishes, desires, their life.
Precisely, Gavin. I couldn't have put it better myself. And when you give people choices, they love it. They absolutely love it. We are working with an organization at the moment that has introduced, they had a terrible performance review system. And their managers and their leaders used to get lose sleep, and they told people how they were doing. So we went in and said, why don't you reverse it? Get the people to come in and get them to do their own performance review. And of course, you've got a few people trying it on to start with. They came in and said, well, I'm excellent in every category. To which the response is fantastic. Please run through some examples. But actually, most people were really hard on themselves. They were marking themselves down. These people, one of these dreadful scales, why don't I just give everyone a 10 on what they're good at and get on with it? However, they had 5, which is a very awkward number to have because 3 is average. And of course, everyone thinks everyone wants to be average, but you try that one in certain areas of your life. I love you, darling. You were average too. Right? See how that one goes down. And so people are coming in and they're saying, no, I'm not a 4. I'm a 2. I've got so much to learn. People will generally be humble. It just amazes me how many people think that true organizational choices and true lasting change comes down to organizational structure, job titles, or some really boring process.
Yeah.
It's not. It's about people. You know the phrase we use, people are not your number one asset in an organization. They're your only asset.
Yeah.
And yeah. Gavin, you've worked in organizations of every size. You don't need to name the organization, but have you got an organization where this stuff certainly worked for you and for them?
Absolutely, large and small. And, I've seen plenty of case studies of organisations where they've taken an enlightened approach to really bringing the best out of their staff. And, I remember, I'll give you an example. When I used to work in my earlier career at BAE Systems, there was a guy that was maybe a 3 in his performance, but outside of work, he had 2 businesses. He had a wedding hire car business, and it was sort of back in the early 90s where sunbeds and sun saloons were really popular in the UK. And he had a little sunbed business as well. And I just looked at this guy who was turning up to work to earn a paycheck, but taking all of his creativity and all of his drive and tenacity and entrepreneurial flair and do something outside of work. So therefore, his employer was not benefiting and tapping into that skill on that. And sat down with and having a chat with him around, okay, so what are your ideas about this? Nobody has ever, I'm only of certain grades. So it's a very militaristic grade structure. I have never been asked for my opinion about those sort of things. What a waste.
I was recently in an organization and I was just asking people how long they've been here just to get a set. There's about 50 people in the room. And one girl said, this is my first day. And I said, now that's new. You can usually tell an organization, people sometimes say, I'm new to this organization. I've only been here 3 years. But this girl was the first day and it was great to meet her. Anyway, we started off a sort of interactive discussion and somebody inevitably used an acronym. And this girl said, excuse me, what did you mean? And I thought, that's brave on your first day. Anyway, I said, what do you mean? And this guy said, it means this. And someone else in the room said, no, it doesn't. And they've been using this acronym, and three people in the room had this argument about what the acronym was.
Oh, my goodness.
And this girl has become a heroine in that organization. She basically now, every room, every meeting she goes to, everyone looks and says, be careful, do not use an acronym because you have to explain what it is. And, you know, it really gets us. Why can't people talk in the way we are as human beings?
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong, Gavin, you know my background is IT. I used to just leave my personality at the door when I went into work. You know, I used to be part of a function that actually called people users. There's only one other industry in the world that has that. It's the drugs industry. And we used to do service level agreements, you know, which had phrases like, did it meet your expectations? You know, can you imagine? Oh, I had a great meal last night. Great meal. Met my expectations. You know, and it's humanizing organizations and setting the people free. Now, don't set them completely free or it'll be chaos. So in Naked Leader, we have this thing called the Friday, which everyone is free to use. And basically, and I think you know about the Friday.
I do indeed. I love it.
Roslyn came up with it, my wife and boss and CEO. The yolk is what you must do. The oil is what you must never do. And the white is in between, and that's your freedom. And when people know what they must do, there are things people must do in organizations.
Absolutely.
And there are things that people must not do, especially at the moment, you know, with all the movements and everything and the complete, quite right focus on sexual harassment, on bullying, and on treating people with respect. But people also want to know what they're free to do. And in organizations that are ravaged by fear, where there's this huge psychological image of we could go bust, so therefore we must play it safe. When the irony is, you play it safe, you're likely to go bust.
Absolutely.
People need to know what they're free to do.
Yeah.
And organizations now are, you know, we're very fortunate to know and get to know a lot of organizations that are expressing that freedom. And that's what moved me away from the Naked books. You can only get so much naked. By the way, somebody, I don't know why I'm keeping my voice down, somebody phoned our office about 3 weeks ago. Did I tell you that's why I asked about you? About the word naked, they want to be the naked gardener. I don't know if I told you.
No.
Yeah, this guy phoned and said, I'd like to be the naked gardener. So Sue, our PA, was fascinated by this. And she said, oh, that sounds intriguing. And he said, yes, I'm phoning you because I understand you have the global rights, intellectual copyright on the word naked.
No way.
To which Sue said, trust me, if we had the global intellectual property rights to the word naked, we would not be doing leadership. We'd be making real money, which I thought was a brilliant response. You know that embedded in the leader and the coach and other naked books, it's actually quite personal.
Mm-hmm.
And the one I've just most recently written, I mean, there couldn't be more of a contrast. I've currently got How to Be Successful by Being Yourself.
So the latest book, How to Be Successful by Being Yourself.
Yes.
By David Hayes.
And my next book is How to Really Do Business in China. So
wow.
Co-authored with our Chinese contact. So it'll be in both Mandarin and English. So it's a double book. So if you it says How to Redo Business in China by her and me. If you turn it over, it says How to Redo Business in the West by me and her. But I'm very proud of this one. And it basically...
So the one you're holding in your hands is How to Be Successful by Being Yourself.
That's correct. Yeah. And it talks about removing the ego voice. The phrase being ego is your earth-guiding officer and the self is your spiritual, everlasting, loving friend. And it's also a long story, very brief. I'm a qualified hypnotherapist,
mm-hmm.
and I think you knew that. And a guy who, I won't say the name of the organization, he worked for a big organization, and he was just been promoted to the American parent company.
Okay.
And he was going across for a big presentation, and he was very nervous. So he phoned the office and said, I need to see David. I very rarely do hypnosis in professional life. There's still a great misunderstanding about it. In fact, it's perfectly normal thing. We hypnotize ourselves every day.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anyway, he wanted a session for confidence. So I said, I'm in Northern Ireland. So he came across, he said, get a meeting room. I said, don't drink anything, don't eat anything, and allow 2 hours. He arrived an hour late. He had 45 minutes before he had to leave. He was chewing on a burger. He'd obviously had a few wines on the plane, and I couldn't get a meeting room, so we had to use my bedroom. This was the most surreal event.
Awkward.
Very awkward. Hashtag very awkward, yes. So, you know those. You know when you go into these rooms in the Premier Inn or the Holiday Inn or wherever you book, you know, the company you're working with puts you, and you go in and you see the bed and you see the bathroom, you say, that's great. And then there's always a little round glass table in the corner with magazines on.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know about you, but I very rarely I know what I'll do. I'll sit down and read some magazines at the glass table. You just don't do it, do you?
Absolutely not.
A meal in the room, you eat these in there. And so I thought, oh, there's... thank God for that glass table. So we sat down and, you know, he said, right, come on, hypnotize me. And there's no way I could hypnotize him because, as I'm sure you know, Gavin, everyone listening to this, digestion is one of the slowest things in the world.
Yeah.
And he was still consuming. So what I did was I basically spoke to him in words and in phrases and in a style as if he was already hypnotized without doing the hypnotic stuff. Now, it didn't have the same effect as it would have done if he'd been hypnotized.
Sure.
It had a far deeper effect. Far, far deeper effect. It was stunning. And as a result of that, I became fascinated by my new passion, which was, could you use everyday conversation like we're using now and get people to change how they feel just by listening to the conversation? So, for example, now...
Yes, you can.
Absolutely. So, for example, everyone listening to this right now, wherever you are listening to it, it could well be that for no apparent reason, you're just starting to relax. You're starting to breathe slightly slower. That's right. Very good. Imagine applying that to being your perfect weight. Imagine applying that to having confidence on demand. Imagine applying that to an area of your life. So this is... I'm going off in two streams now. One is more books written in that style, and the other is really all about my new favorite country, which is China.
So the voice of the book, the way you're writing the book, is as if you were speaking in hypnotic language patterns.
The big reservation when we did the audio book was that people like it to be personalized for them. So although I did read the book in the audio version, we stress in here, when you're reading it, I mean, if you're listening to this, obviously it's my voice, but when you're reading it, we always say, imagine it's your own voice, the friendliest voice that you've got. So when you've quietened that ego voice, and the way to do that, of course, is to close your eyes, go to a special place, close your eyes, and just say thank you in silence, and your voice will go quiet. And then this other whispering voice behind, the one that's been wanting to nurture you and unlock your full potential and love you all of your life, will come out. And that's the voice we want people to listen to. It's almost a whispering voice. And I'm absolutely stunned that it's already translated into 18 different languages and doing rather well. So, yeah.
Fantastic. So how do people find out more about what you do, whether in terms of your books or indeed the work you do within corporates around helping them achieve three times more?
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank you, Gavin, and anyone who's still listening to this podcast after I've been going on and on. At Naked Leader across social media and www.nakedleader.com, which was my ease that I said the www bit. And we're on a new mission to unlock the potential of everyone on earth. We've got China on board with that, which will give us a huge start. If anyone wants to join us with that, just connect with us on social media. We're doing some exciting stuff.
Share for a few minutes what you're doing in China.
We're basically, the bizarre thing about China is that it started with me going across there and talking about Zen Buddhism. I was sorry to talk about mindfulness, but of course it's all about Zen Buddhism. It's all about the Tao. It's all about Confucianism. And of course, every Chinese audience I go across to meet, and I've only been to China about a dozen times now, I do start with an apology. You know, your ancestors did this stuff 5,000 years ago. I almost say to them, you shouldn't be inviting me across because your ancestors already know. But I say it in a much more positive way, and they all love it. And on one of my visits, I met a lady who's a senior. I can't say who she is, but it is in the public domain. But she's the head of a China desk at a very big company. She loved Naked Leader, so she is partnering with me to write the book. So it'll be obvious in a few months. Her name is Jingru Liu, and she's head of China desk at BDO. And she will continue in that role, but she knows China inside out. So we've just become fascinated by China, and the book, the Naked Leader book, is just massive in China. So we're partnering with China, and the idea is that through China and through other venture capital backing that we're talking to, they'll take Naked Leader around the world to get this message across to every single person that actually, do you know what? As an individual, you've got far more choices than you may realize. So anyone out there who's listening to this who's struggling personally, struggling in a relationship, struggling with their business, know this, you've always got more choices, and it's whether you're brave enough to get back up again that it makes the difference. In fact, the notepad I'm looking at has got this brilliant quote on it. Courage is being scared to death, but saddling up anyway. And that's John Wayne, the actor.
Love that.
And that sums up completely. Who was it, Marion Williamson, who said, feel the fear and do it anyway? No, it's
Susan Jeffers.
Feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah.
So we say to people, I'm scared. Yes, what are you going to do about it? And my final parting with this, yeah, I'm very proud of my books, but they are nothing on two things. The TV program Breaking Bad and the film Frozen. Now, obviously, one of those you must not watch with children. Do not watch Frozen with children. They'll think it's some fairy tale, and actually it's the deepest, most psychological manipulation of the things I've shared with you. And if you only watch Frozen for a short time, just watch Olaf the Snowman. Every line he says is a summary of why people do what they do. It's extraordinary. And as for Breaking Bad, we can throw in The Sopranos. I don't just watch violent things. You can throw in Lost. You can throw in 24. You can throw in Game of Thrones. These things are so manipulative on us, and you'll see this formula being applied time and time again. And if you want to see the formula, go and see any mainstream film. In fact, spoil it for your partner, because you'll go in and know where you want to go. Spoil it for them. So you go in and you sit down and you start off, and you'll say, well, that's the pot of gold. That's not where you want to go.
Yeah.
And they're where you are now. That's when the hero or the villain is. Know what you have to do. That's the call to arms. Yeah. Are you going to go on the journey? Yeah. Do it. That's the road of trials. And you'll know when the film's about to end, because you can say to your partner, that's a big trial. It's going to end in 5 minutes. Just watch. And it ends in 5 minutes. And if you really want to piss them off, take notes. I've gone on for long enough. Thank you for listening, and thank you, Gavin, for having me.
Oh, David, a real pleasure, as ever. So check out nakedleader.com, David's latest book, How to Be Successful by Being Yourself. David, a pleasure as ever. Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of The Business Mastermind is brought to you by The Evolve Mastermind. The Evolve Mastermind is a business mastermind for business owners of businesses turning over between 500,000 and 5 million per annum. Their monthly events provide you with solutions, strategies, inspiration, and insights to help you scale and grow your business. Each month, there's a handpicked speaker to provide you with relevant strategies, plus time to mastermind with other business owners on issues that are facing you and your business. With groups in Chelmsford in Essex and Manchester in the Northwest, and more locations planned, go to www.the-evolve-mastermind.co.uk. That's www.the-evolve-mastermind.co.uk.
You've been listening to the Business Mastermind podcast. Be sure to subscribe, rate, and review so that more people like you can get their business back on their own terms, enjoy more success, and create more impact.